Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to Embracing What Is Real. I'm your host, Elaine Lipson. Embracing What's Real is the forum to explore the nature of reality and the impact our current belief systems have on our lives. All of our deep-rooted old beliefs are what many of us use to judge ourselves and our actions. Our current belief systems impact every single choice we make. So when we feed our spirit with new, empowering ideas about the meaning of life, the meaning of our lives change. Hello! Today, I am so excited to welcome our special guest, Daryl Anka. Many of our listeners know Daryl as a trance channel who began communicating with an extraterrestrial entity called Bashar in 1983. What many of our listeners may not know is that Daryl also has a career in Hollywood as a movie producer, and he recently released a new film called Dearly Departed. And we're going to talk about that film quite a bit today. But I want to say Daryl does not just dabble in the film industry. He's worked as a visual and special effects artist on Star Trek The Motion Picture, iRobot, Pirates of the Caribbean, Live Free or Die Hard, and Iron Man before becoming a producer and a writer. You can learn more about Daryl by checking out his websites, www.bashar.org and www.ziafilms.com. Let's bring him on right now. I am so excited to introduce Daryl Anka. Hello, Daryl.
Hi, Helene. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Oh, I'm so excited to talk to you. It's wonderful that you could be here.
Oh, my pleasure.
So, you know, I saw your film, Dearly Departed, and I have to tell you, I absolutely loved it.
Well, thank you.
Well, it got me thinking quite a bit about what happens to people after they cross over to the other side. And Dearly Departed explores the different experiences that people have on the spirit side of life based on their personal beliefs about the meaning of life and death. So I want to start by asking you how your experience as someone who's been channeling Bashar for 30 years helped you develop the characters in the film.
Well, it really was a matter of wanting to represent as many walks of life and as many different points of view as we possibly could. One of the things that has become very evident in the channeled messages that come through me from Bashar is that a lot of the concepts that we have been dealing with for many years are a little bit outdated, a little bit outmoded, and could use a little bit of upgrading, and that also a lot of different points of view are really all pretty much valid in the sense that everyone is a different perspective of creation. Everyone has a different experience of creation, but they're all real, they're all valid, they're all true in the sense that all of them are a part of creation, and nothing is in that sense excluded from the total of creation. So we wanted to explore the concept of what happens to us in the afterlife based on a lot of near-death experience reports, based on some of the information from the channeling about what's going on in the spirit world. But we didn't really want to do it as a dry documentary. We were kind of like looking around for an angle, for a way to present this idea. And one day we were just sort of musing to ourselves that, you know, wouldn't it be great if we could take a camera into the afterlife and actually interview the spirits of dead people and get their insights on life after death. So we just sort of looked at each other and went, well, why don't we just film it as if that's what we did? So that's how we did it. And that gave us the opportunity beyond what you might experience in a typical documentary of really developing characters that had stories, that had real experiences, so we could use the information through them as if it was their own personal life stories and really get all these different varied points of view and different kinds of experiences from different walks of life, different people at different ages, dying in different ways, crossing over and having different experiences, but not only investigating all the individual differences, but also investigating the common thread between them all. And that just gave us the most flexibility in presenting these ideas in a film, and so that's why we did it that way.
Well, you know, so many people are afraid of death.
Yes.
And so this movie brings a great deal of comfort to those who see it. Now, you know, what I noticed was most of the characters in the film were at peace right away after they died.
Mm-hmm.
But some were not, some weren't. There was a character in the film, I think her name was Kate Spencer, who died in a plane crash, and she didn't even realize she was dead. And she was sitting in what looked like a waiting room.
Yes.
So could you elaborate on what happens to people who die, but they don't even realize they're dead?
Well, again, gleaning what we have read from different kinds of near-death experience reports and also from hypnotic regressions of people remembering their lives in between lives in the spirit world and so forth, and from some of the channeling information. And again, because we wanted to represent all sorts of beliefs, including the idea that there are people who do not believe that anything happens at all after they die, we thought it would be very interesting to represent the idea of someone who died without a belief that there was an afterlife, and what would they experience? So to us, it was based on all that information, like the idea of in a sense, someone not really believing or knowing that they've died, and they kind of have to be convinced by their spirit guide that they're not just in some nebulous sort of space, that they're not, they haven't gone insane, you know, or anything like that, that they are, in fact, having to accept the fact that they are now in spirit. And just, you know, we just kind of used our imaginations to put that forth and write what we thought would be the process of somebody coming to the realization that they, in fact, still exist after death and having to accept that.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You know, I'm just thinking about another. I guess I want to talk about then the survival of consciousness after death. You even had a part of the movie with Albert Einstein coming in. So I'd like you to tell me more about the survival of consciousness after death.
Well, you know, it's sort of like one of the lines that Albert Einstein in the movie says, you know, that there's no, it's not that there's an afterlife. There's just life. There are different phases of life. It's all just life. And it's not so much the idea of the survival of consciousness. It's the idea that we are consciousness. And we can come into physical experience. We can go into non-physical experience. So to me, using the word survival in a sense implies that somehow that we were conscious in physical reality first, when I believe that we were simply conscious as beings first, and that physical reality is an experience we can have, one of the many kinds of experiences we can have along the way on our life path, be it in physical reality, non-physical reality, other dimensions, what have you. I just think consciousness is our natural state. We exist, and there's nothing we can do about that. We can't cease to exist. It's a fundamental quality that we have. So to me, it's not so much about presenting the survival of consciousness as it is presenting the idea that we are consciousness first and foremost, and that physical reality is simply one way in which consciousness can experience itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think about it, made me think a little bit about mediums, you know, people that are on the earth and then could also communicate with those on the spirit side of life. And I was thinking about, at one point in the movie, you had this 10-year-old kid who died. I think the character was Bobby Rivers. And
yes,
he let his brother see him so that his brother would be at peace, because his brother Danny accidentally pushed him out of a tree, and that's how Bobby Rivers died, and Bobby
right.
didn't want Danny to carry the guilt. So
right.
it made me wonder, do the people who cross over control who on earth can see them, or is it just particular people who have mediumistic qualities that can see
I think it can go in both directions from what I've been able to research. There are probably incidents where the spirits can make themselves seen, and there are probably incidents where people here are just simply more sensitive, I'll just say antennas, than other
mm-hmm.
people, and simply can see things that other people cannot. So I think it depends on the case, it depends on the situation and circumstance as to the way in which it goes and what's appropriate for the person to experience. Because as we sort of laid out in the same basic scenario with Bobby and with a few other characters in the movie, sometimes they even attempt to present themselves or show themselves to people who they left behind who are still alive, and those people cannot see them. So I think it's not always necessarily that they can force us to see them. I think a lot of it also has to do with what we believe is possible, and certainly I think we can shut those facilities down, and no matter how hard the spirit tries, there may be people who are simply unable or unwilling to perceive them. But I do think it works both ways in certain cases.
Well, what could people that have crossed over do to let people that are living see them? Like, what do they actually do?
I think they lower their vibrational frequency again, because the idea to me of going into a non-physical reality is simply raising your vibration in such a way that you go beyond the range of our physical senses. I often use the idea of kind of an ice, water, steam analogy. You know, here in physical reality, it's like everything is kind of frozen energy. We're like ice. When you kind of raise the vibrational frequency, things become a little bit more fluid. And when you keep raising it, things dissipate and evaporate and go into steam. The water's still there. It still exists. But now it's no longer really visible in the same way that it was when it was ice, and it's no longer tangible. So I think it's just a matter of the spirits really kind of sort of bringing their vibrational frequency down again to at least something closer to the frequency at which we exist in physical reality, and then they come within the range of our senses again to some degree.
That's actually a brilliant analogy. I'm thinking also about how would somebody on the spirit side of life move objects?
Well, again, I think it again has to do with resonance, with frequency of energy. Anything has to match the frequency of something to some degree to be able to interact with it. It may take practice on their part, I'm not really sure, because once they're in non-physical reality, that seems, I think, to them more the natural state of things, and to interact with physical matter may not anymore be what's natural to them. But again, I think with focus and intention, they can probably alter their frequency to some degree to make them capable in some cases of even affecting physical matter. They may have a larger degree of control over that than we do. But again, I think a lot of it has to do with what the purpose is for them doing that. And if there's a true need for them to do that, that may add the kind of energy that's necessary for them to be capable of accomplishing an act like that.
Now, what about animals? Like, there was one part in the film, I guess there was a girl named Kelko who used her cat mm-hmm. to let her mother know that she was okay.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear more about, like, animals, pets. I don't know, does that still go with for dogs, too? I'd like to know how...
Well, yeah, I think it goes for a lot of animals, and I believe that animals, in many ways, are probably far more perceptive about other realities, other dimensions than we are. Not that we can't be, but I think that they just naturally are. And from my experience especially, I mean, we have two cats, and from my experience with cats, I do believe that they very naturally can see spirits and things that are quite invisible to us. So I think it's probably easier in some cases for spirits to communicate to the animal and get the animal to do something in the physical reality that they have a hard time getting across to the human that might be in that reality, because we have a tendency to sort of shut those senses down, whereas I think animals are just very open to what's going on around them. You know, and I've had experiences with cats where they have definitely been looking at something that I cannot see, and I don't just mean like a bug in the air or something. There have been a couple of situations I've experienced with them where there is definitely some presence there that they can see that I cannot.
I believe that too. I've seen my dog jump up and do a bunch of different things, and there was nothing there. I've also seen the dogs bark at nothing, even though I guess maybe that's they do that a lot. A lot of pets do that.
Sometimes. I mean, you know, sometimes they are perhaps barking at a sound or something else going on that you may just not pick up on. But there are definitely times when they're perceiving things that are there that we just can't see with our eyes or hear with our ears.
That's interesting. I was also, it got me thinking, the film got me thinking about people who die that are suffering from addictions on the earth. They're like, I want to know what happens to them after they die. I mean, it was interesting. You had this character, Delilah, drinking shots continually. Obviously, maybe she was an alcoholic in life of some sort. She wasn't getting drunk at all.
No, because it's not real there.
But she wasn't
The alcohol is being created out of her mind at that point. It's not really having any physical effect because she's no longer physical, but she's still in the habit of actually making the glass and the liquor appear before her and acting like going through the motions of what she went through in physical reality. But it's, you know, as we point out in the film, it's not really having the same effect on her because she's no longer really physical.
No, but she wasn't, like, tormented either. She was just pouring it, and she was just doing that. So is that what that's like if perhaps somebody died and they were addicted to smoking or they were addicted to alcohol?
They might do that, or they might not have the urge anymore at all. But I think there can't necessarily be one answer to that for everyone. I think that it really depends on each person, why they experienced what they experienced in physical reality, what it is they still may need to ponder or focus on in the afterlife. I think that there can be any number of things that can occur to any number of people, even if two people have the same, let's say you're using the term addiction to something, one may need to really explore the idea of what it was they went through in physical reality in one particular kind of way. Another person may simply be done with that idea and may go on to a whole other level and not need to look at that anymore at all. It just really, I think, depends on the person on a case-by-case basis. So I don't think there's one thing that happens to everyone, even if they have similar habits in the physical reality. It really depends on their life path and what it is they have to learn and why they may have chosen to go down that path.
Would somebody that possibly had an addiction, would they have to return to Earth and process that addiction and release
it? Not necessarily, no. They may choose to, but I don't think they necessarily have to. I think it's just a matter of what they set up for themselves and what will work best for them in terms of what they want to get out of that experience and what they want to learn from it. But other people may be very capable of learning what they need to learn while in non-physical reality and will simply have no need to experience any continuation of that idea in the physical world. But again, it really depends, I think, on the person. Now, I think there's some truth to the idea that people that might be addicted to things strongly, people that might be in very strong, deep states of depression or denial or pain or some sort of suffering, they may not necessarily go into the afterlife knowing that they have a choice. It's certainly possible that they may stay or remain on a lower level, a lower vibratory level, where they may not necessarily experience the freedom that a lot of spirits experience when they cross over, to know that they have a freedom to choose what they really want to experience at that point. And so that some of them might linger. And those, I think, are what we usually refer to as haunts or ghosts, you know, people that still have to work certain things out or think that they have to work them out in a certain way, may linger on a lower vibratory level, what some people may call or refer to as the lower astral. But again, I think it really just depends on what that person is capable of understanding when they cross over, and or what they've set up for themselves in that life and why they experienced what they did. So some people may linger with it. Some people may need to do it physically. Some people may just suddenly completely wake up when they cross over, get the whole point in a split second and say, okay, that's great, I get it, I'm done with that, I'm moving on. It really, I think, just depends upon each individual.
So I guess I just to piggyback on that, is there anything that would make someone have to return to Earth or be Earthbound, come back again?
I think not ultimately. The only things we've ever really heard in a lot of the near-death experience reports, in the sense where guides say, well, you know, it's not your time, you need to return, is that it may simply be an indication that the agreement that the person made with themselves may simply not be up. Now, obviously, if someone, I think, really, really refused in some ways to go back or came back and decided, well, you know, I'm going to do something to take myself out, you know, there's not much that can be done about that. But I do think we usually generally have choices. But I think that when we're, in a sense, shortchanging the choices we've actually already made on another level, we will probably have assistance in and help in being reminded that we do need to do this or we do need to go back or something like that, because it's what we actually chose, even if we don't remember it from another level. Because I believe that, you know, when our time is truly up, when we're truly done with what we came here to do, we will go. There'll be nothing that'll stop us from going. Unless, again, we choose maybe to stay longer if that becomes part of our agreement. So, but in general, no, I don't think that there's anything we really have to do. I think that we are given choices at every level in general.
Do we have a choice when we're going to cross over?
I think we've already chosen that. That's what I'm saying. It's like I think we set up certain ideas, certain windows of when we come in, when we leave. I don't think they're necessarily all completely precisely chosen to the minute. I think that can happen. Probably most people will choose a general window when they're done and say, well, you know, I have this to explore, I have this to explore. And any time from, you know, between this month or this year and this year, you know, if I'm done and I haven't changed my mind that there's something else I want to explore, then whatever needs to happen to get me to cross over can happen. And I'll trust that whatever random event comes up, that's the most, let's say, most opportune window that opens or door that opens for me to cross over. So that could be by, quote unquote, an accident, which, you know, I don't really believe are accidents. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they can take advantage of certain random nature of physical reality to say, look, any time within this time span, you know, I could leave. And it could be by an accident, it could be by this, it could be by that. It doesn't really much matter. Whereas some people may have a very specific reason for choosing a particular time and place and a particular method of leaving. And that, again, will have to do with what they've chosen to experience in their life path.
Hmm. Now, you had brought up ghosts before,
mm-hmm.
and actually, so I'd love to talk about ghosts. I actually, the character Cedric,
yes.
who was apparently haunting a house,
yes.
was
one of my
favorite
movie. Characters in the movie.
Mine
yeah.
too. That was my favorite character in the movie. I loved that character.
Oh, well, the actor will be very happy to hear you say that.
Really? No,
yeah,
I loved him.
Yeah, he did a great job with that.
Yeah, he really did. Like I said, that was my favorite. And it made me wonder, why are some people ghosts? Why would they choose to be ghosts? And
well,
what plane
I think there
are
may
they
be,
looming on?
I think there may be reasons why in many cases they sort of do choose to hang around. I think for the most part, the beings that do hang around, though, it's more a matter of unfinished business. It's more a matter of maybe not necessarily knowing or wanting to know that they can actually go somewhere else. I think on the lower astral levels where those spirits can linger in that lower vibration, there may still be remnants of issues, remnants of fears, and those kinds of experiences that they have yet to let go of. And I think it's those vibrations that kind of keep them close to the physical plane and make them hang around in such a way that they can actually be perceived now and then by us, which is why we have stories of hauntings and ghosts and things like that, because they're actually not that vibrationally far off from us. They're still very close to the physical reality for a variety of reasons. Some of them may simply be that, again, people might die and not know they're dead. or they may have issues of things they don't want to leave behind and are afraid to let go of, and so they're lingering. And any number of variety of other reasons. And, you know, as we sort of see in the movie with Cedric, the ghost who's haunting his house, you know, he just feels like, you know, why should I be anywhere else? This is my home. And he's actually kind of lonely and afraid to admit it. And that's kind of what's keeping him anchored to the earth is just his fear of, you know, here I am, and I'm constantly surrounded by these people that keep occupying the house. So he kind of has a sense of family, even though they can't really see him or interact with him strongly. And I think it abates his sense of loneliness. And he's afraid to admit that, and so it keeps him from moving on until he finally realizes that, you know, there's more for him than just hanging around an old house.
Well, and he looked like he lingered a long time also.
Yeah,
when,
hundreds of
you know,
years
and,
from our point of view.
Yeah. But what about, he was not really a scary ghost, right? He was a lonely ghost who was just attached to that geographic area or that home. But what about, like, scary ghosts or...
We sort of did that a little bit with Cedric, showing again that he's trying to, like, keep people at bay. You know, when people are, he feels people are sort of discounting him or messing with him, as he did with you know, the exorcist that we talked about in the movie that came into the house to try to get rid of him. He made himself visible, and he made himself look very scary to scare her away. So he did that really in a sense of saying, you know, don't mess with me, don't bother me, leave me alone. This is my choice, and I don't want you around here. So he kind of became his own guard dog in a sense, and you know, became scary and in essence barked at her and scared her out of the house. You know, but again, there can be a variety of reasons why that might occur. And I think a lot of it comes from unfinished business, pain perhaps that people haven't let go of. Because, you know, when people are in pain and in denial, they can get very angry. They can be very mean. And I think that on the lower astral levels, I don't think that that trait necessarily has disappeared. So, but, you know, when someone who's non-physical is mean and scary and angry and all that because they're afraid or what have you, because non-physical reality takes whatever form we immediately think it should take, they can probably appear very frightening to us, more so than a physical person would, because whatever things you think in non-physical reality, there's no time lag between what you think and what manifests. So they can probably appear in very scary ways, and it's probably just a reflection of the fact that they're scared themselves.
Interesting.
That's, I think, why, you know, there are people like mediums and exorcists who can get in touch with these spirits and act, in a sense, as sort of therapists to help them cross over, and why guides on the other side can also perhaps be helpful in that way to sort of make them realize there's nothing to be afraid of. You can integrate this idea. You don't longer have to be scared or in denial or angry, and just give over to your true spiritual self and expand in joy and love and move on. And so I think from both the physical and the non-physical side, people that are sort of stuck in that area do actually have help to help them, urge them to move on. And we talked about that in the movie too, because we talked about Cedric's spirit guide coming around now and then to sort of see how he's doing.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about spirit guides since you bring that up now. What about the people who die?
Mm-hmm.
Like, even like the character, I think his name was Cesar Alvarez in the movie.
Yes.
And he decided after he died that he was going to be a spirit guide.
Yes.
Now, are many of the spirit guides that are working with us just people who were once alive and chose that mission to help?
I believe that's the case. That doesn't mean that there can't be other kinds of spirit guides, but I believe that quite a number of them are simply friends and family that we've known, and that this is now a calling that they've taken upon themselves to aid and assist those that are still living.
So they could have a lot of, like, it seemed like the character Cesar had a lot of people he was helping, not just one or two. He was the guide for many. Is that what it's like when you're a spirit guide?
Well, again, I don't think there's any one general truth to that. I think it, again, depends upon the spirit guide. I think, you know, some may decide that they are, you know, it's important for them to help one particular person. Some may feel that they can help multiple people. I think it just depends, like anything. I'll just use the word, you know, what kind of a career do you want there? You know, do you want it to be on a more personal one-to-one level, or are you okay with working with the general public? You know, I think that on the spirit side, people actually do have these kinds of choices. I don't think there's any one cut and dried rule book about exactly how someone needs to be a spirit guide.
Some of the people portrayed in the film, there was that they're in actually a house, or they just created in it with their own thoughts where they were going to be and where they were going to exist.
Yeah, one of the things that we've read many times in a lot of the reports that we glean some of the information from is, again, the idea that, you know, here in physical reality, we have space and time to deal with, and we have time lags, and things take time to manifest. But in non-physical reality, there's really a completely different experience of space and time. And when you think of something, it instantaneously manifests. So if you remember the house you used to live in and really feel strongly about that environment, and it's some place you really loved to be, it will probably instantly appear around you, or at least seem to be appearing around you, to whatever degree of tangibility you believe you can manifest it. So I think in spirit, you can still have what appear to be very strong physical surroundings, but they're simply made out of the energy of your consciousness. It's just that they appear instantaneously and appear very real, just because there's no more space and time in the same way we deal with it in physical reality. I mean, physical reality is an extension of our consciousness too. What may feel like a solid chair, a solid wall, or a solid house really is just an extension of our consciousness. It's just that it works a little bit differently here in physical space-time when we have concepts like those to deal with, whereas in spirit, it's just what you think is what you get instantaneously. So many of the characters in the movie are actually manifesting those surroundings out of their own memories of where it was they were comfortable in life, until such time as perhaps they just feel they don't need it anymore and they can move on and create whatever kind of an environment they want, or perhaps even what appears to be almost no environment at all, maybe just pure light. But again, it just depends on where those beings are in their particular evolutionary path or what it is they're exploring as to what they'll experience.
Yeah. Well, I can't believe what a great job you did on this film. I'm just thinking what you said just now. You just got me thinking about that character. I think his name was Victor, maybe. He died in a warlike scene. But he returned to the kitchen.
Of his country home.
Yeah, and he was drinking a cup of coffee and sitting in the kitchen. And he wasn't a ghost. He wasn't haunting the place like that character Cedric, who was actually a ghost. He was just sitting there because that's what he recreated.
He had a wife. I mean, it almost really doesn't matter in some of the scenes whether they're actually in the kitchen they used to live in or whether they're creating it for themselves. It's really just the idea of a place that represents home to these people. And whether or not we have found them in those homes and had the opportunity to interview them in the homes they really used to live in, or whether they're recreating that environment for themselves simply because it means home to them, really doesn't matter. We sort of explore both sides of that. So in any case, we're not in the movie, we're not always delineating exactly whether what you're seeing is coming out of their mind or whether they're really actually in the building, because in some cases it doesn't really matter. It's just a place that represents home to them.
Interesting. So once you cross over, Daryl, once you go through with loved ones to the light and cross over, are you then in a fifth dimensional reality?
Yes, basically, I would say you are. And it's possible to go into higher dimensions from there as well, I believe.
So somebody that was a ghost, are they like in a lower fourth dimensional reality?
Well, because they're non-physical, it might still be considered the idea of a fifth-dimensional reality. I know those delineations can sometimes be somewhat arbitrary, but myself personally consider higher fourth density and, you know, fourth dimensional reality to simply to still be somewhat of a physical experience, whereas to me fifth density or fifth dimensional reality is non-physical, even if they're at the lower level of it.
I guess what I mean is, where are you if you don't cross over? If you're just like in that waiting room, like that character Kate, or if you're in a ghost,
you're still,
like Cedric?
You're still, in a sense, you're still, I mean, this gets into, you know, very sort of esoteric territory. In a sense, you're still here, because really, fundamentally, everything that exists is here. Wherever you are, there is only one place and only one time in creation. It's always here. It's always now. It's just that everything exists at a different frequency, and therefore you don't perceive them. The analogy that is often used is like a television set. If you're looking at one program on Channel 2, let's say, and you want to suddenly change channels to Channel 4, well, you know that the program on Channel 2 still exists in the same spot. It's not like it's gone somewhere else. It's just that you're now on a different frequency, so you're now getting a different program. But all the other programs are there at the same time, occupying, in a sense, the same space at the same time. They're just on a different frequency, and that's why you only see the one that you are tuned to at that moment. So I think physical reality, non-physical reality, I think the dimensions, parallel worlds, I think it's all very much structured in a similar way. Everything is here. Everything is now, but we're on slightly different channels, and so we only perceive what's on the channel we're tuned to.
Interesting. Interesting, and thank you for answering that.
Sure.
You know, I also want to talk about a character, Maya, and I was really touched by that character. She died in a sudden
car crash.
Yes, a car accident, and she was worried who would take care of her daughter. And from the spirit side, can those who died line things up on the earth plane to take care of the living?
Yes, they can. I've had personal experiences with that. Where my friends that I have known who have passed over have definitely done things that I recognize absolutely had to have come from their influence in some way, shape, or form. Otherwise, there was no way they would have happened because it was just too specific. Now, they definitely don't interfere, but they can definitely suggest, they can definitely urge, they can definitely line things up in certain ways synchronistically. A lot of times spirits on the other side, whether they're guides or simply friends who've passed on or family, will often use what's immediately in our reality to get a message across or to deliver, you know, to get our attention and get things to sort of help things along in a certain direction. They're never going to do anything for us, because it's really our process. They're not going to live our lives for us, but they can certainly help in the same way that they helped when they were alive. They will do whatever, you know, is appropriate for them to do. So I think that that definitely can happen, and they definitely are still, in many ways, a part of our lives. It's just that now they have to operate in a slightly different way.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. You know, I also want to hear about people who murder people and kill on the earth.
Right.
Some people in the film actually committed murder.
Yeah.
And they weren't exactly in hell either. I mean, actually, one guy was in his own private hell.
Right.
But for
well,
the
I think
most
that's
part,
what it is. Yeah.
Yeah, but some of them weren't. Some of them were just talking about the experience. So I want to know, what happens to someone when they die, who's like a murderer or a killer?
Well, I think the one thing that we present in the movie that I think is definitely true across the board for everyone eventually at some point or another in their experience of the afterlife is they go through what has typically been called a life review. Because, again, the idea is that, you know, when we do things on the earth, we may not, because of the space-time barrier we have here, we may not experience any immediate consequence of something that we do. We may not experience what someone else's reaction is to what we've done. But when you get into non-physical reality, because all of those space-time barriers are gone, we suddenly realize that we are connected to everything and everyone. And therefore, in that moment, if not before, we suddenly experience the consequence in the life review of every single thing, every single choice we've ever made. And that means that if for some reason we did something that intentionally harmed someone else, we will instantly feel the consequence of that action exactly as if it was happening to us. So while that's not necessarily a literal hell, I do believe that spirits will experience all of the things that they caused to happen with other people. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that every single thing that you did that was unintentional will necessarily bounce back or be felt by you to the same degree as something you did that was truly deliberately negative. But for those things that were deliberately negative, I do believe that the people will experience what that was like from the other point of view, from the people that they created harm to. And I think that that will become a learning experience for those people to understand that there are consequences to our actions, that there is an energy result, and that we cannot escape that. We are responsible for that, and that we will understand that in a very visceral way on the other side. But I don't think it's an eternal punishment. I think it's an opportunity to learn from our mistakes, to learn from the negative choices we may have made, and to become better beings by understanding what the consequences of our choices actually are.
Yeah.
Now, if someone has done something so heinous that they're momentarily in what might be referred to as a living hell, well, you know, that might be the degree to which they need to experience the consequence of some of the actions that they took. Nevertheless, I don't believe it's endless. I do believe that everyone is given the choice to learn from those experiences, or they're given the choice to not learn from those experiences, and perhaps they'll do things again that will cause the same kind of consequences and the same kind of experiences that they'll have to ultimately go through again and again. But eventually, I believe people will get the point, and they are always given a choice to know that there is some other choice they can make, and that, you know, ultimately they will prefer to be more in alignment with, you know, positive energy than negative energy. And it's just basically a learning experience.
Yeah. And it's interesting, Daryl, because you had such a cool role in the film, too. We never saw your face.
No.
It seemed like you were playing the role of God or Source.
Well, we let that kind of be a mystery. I'm interviewing the people. You hear my voice in the movie. And sometimes some of the characters even ask me, who are you? You know, and we give kind of our answer. My answers are a little bit cryptic, but that was done on purpose. I really want the audience to sort of put their own interpretation on who is actually asking the questions. It could be Source. It could be God. It could be a personal guide. It could be anyone. It could be the people themselves asking themselves the questions. I just really wanted to leave that open-ended, leave it a little bit mysterious, and let people sort of become interactive with the film in that way by trying to guess who that is.
It's interesting. You know, I'm going to switch gears a little bit.
Sure.
You know, watching the film, it got me thinking a lot, obviously, about what happens to different types of people after they die. And I was thinking about somebody like Michael Jackson or Princess Diana or Jerry Garcia, who I love so much. What is their death experience like? I mean, how is their experience different, being that they're so loved and they're so talked about and they're so thought about by the masses?
I'm sure there is a definite effect that being a public figure has upon the spirit, because there are so many people that love them. I'm sure that adds to the overall experience that they have when they cross over, of feeling that unconditional love that so many people do describe, and that I do actually think happens for most people who cross over. When we talk about the people that linger and the people that experience some, you know, the residual effects of negative actions and things like that, I don't believe that actually happens for most people. my understanding from the research we've done is that most people will experience a very loving transition, because it's like waking up from a dream, and it's like becoming more and remembering more of who you really are. And so I think that when people have done things in the world that also have allowed people to give back a lot of love for whatever those people have done, I definitely feel that when people cross over, they'll feel that very tangibly. It'll add its energy and momentum to the unconditional love that they're already going to feel from Source when they cross over. I definitely think that has an effect on people like that, because they've had such a strong effect on us.
Interesting. And what about past lives and reincarnation? I mean,
we do deal with that in the film quite a bit, but
yeah.
the way we did not deal with it in the film, because we felt it would be a little bit just too much information right now for a lot of people, is we left it kind of in the classical sense of people having had past lives and maybe choosing future lives and all that. My understanding, technically speaking, is that there, in a sense, is no such thing mechanically as reincarnation. You can create the experience of reincarnation, of having one life after another, but I believe that that's actually a physical, linear space-time point of view of an experience. The idea, from my perspective, is that all lives exist at the same time. Just again, going back to the television analogy, all the programs are here right now that you're watching. They all exist. It's just that you don't necessarily experience all of them at once. So I think all lives exist at the same time, and what we call a past life is just another concurrent parallel reality going on, another person having another life, but we're cross-connecting to them somehow, energetically, informationally, because for some reason making that cross-connection, which we experience in linear space-time as memories, somehow serves us to have information from their life experience. It serves our life experience to have made that connection, and probably works in the other direction as well. The connection between us probably serves their life experience, and they may think of us as a future life or a past life or something like that, but all the lives exist all at the same time, and connections are made to those lives from the present. The connection doesn't actually come from the past nor go to the future. Even though you can create the experience that it does, that's not what's actually mechanically happening, or that's not the actual nature of the structure that's going on. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I like the way the film alludes to the idea that we're all playing different roles for each other.
Mm-hmm.
Even the ones that are playing the bad guys are still pure Source energy.
Well, of course,
when they're crossing
is.
Over.
Even if someone has forgotten that they are and falls into negativity and darkness, of course they are obviously still an aspect of Source, because there is nothing but Source. There's no outside to that. Everything is made from the same thing. It's all one thing. So, you know, different people will play different roles for a variety of different reasons, some because there's a real strong purpose in doing that, and others because they've simply forgotten who they are and will fall into a certain role without necessarily meaning to. But ultimately, when they wake up at some point, either in life or in the so-called afterlife, they will realize that it's a role and it was for the purpose of simply having an experience to grow and to learn and to evolve as a being, as a consciousness.
Interesting. Now, I want to switch gears a bit here, Daryl, but this is still in line with reincarnation.
Mm-hmm.
You know I'm working with In5D events,
mm-hmm.
and we're putting together a huge event this fall called Return to Atlantis, and we're
mm-hmm.
having it literally on the shores of Atlantis in Sarasota, Florida, near Fiesta Key, and where the sand is made of very fine quartz crystal and it never gets hot. And it's said to be extremely connected to the remains of Atlantis.
Yeah, that whole
area
down there in the Bahamas is very strong connection to one of the major areas, I think, that Atlantis, part of Atlantis, used to occupy.
Well, what we're trying to do, we're going to have speakers, but we're throwing this huge party in the ballroom of a beautiful hotel, because our intent is to reunite those kindred spirits who have memories of living during Atlantean times. So can you tell me, and I know this is switching gears, but mm-hmm. can you tell me a bit about Atlantean times and why we may have chosen now to incarnate back on Earth?
Well, again, just to lay down the caveat that, you know, for the purpose of this conversation, I'm speaking in linear terms, even though I think that all these lives exist at the same time and are going on right now. The Atlantean lives are happening right now, but on a different frequency in a different parallel reality we call the past. The idea of making these connections now, I think, has a lot to do with what we're going through, especially as a country. America, in many ways, is actually like a replaying of some of the things that occurred in Atlantean times. It's almost like we're doing a do-over so that we can decide perhaps this time not to destroy ourselves, not to go out in a catastrophe. We're kind of looking at those, some of the same ideas that were played out then from a variety of different points of view, and hopefully moving on in a more positive direction than what occurred back then, historically speaking. So I think the idea is to get in touch with the positive energy that Atlantis represents and to help us take that energy forward in kind of a new Atlantean sort of mindset, and to continue that legacy in a very positive way, because, you know, nothing ever really dies. So in a very real sense, Atlantis still exists, and that's us. You know, in the American and part of the European areas, I think we're still playing out all of those Atlantean ideas.
Interesting. And why now also? I mean, why now do you think that we're feeling so drawn to create this reunion event at this particular place and time? I mean, is there something bigger here that we as light workers and star seeds and way showers are feeling this sense of urgency to finally come together?
Yeah, I do. I think in a sense you're seeing the end of a cycle and the beginning of a new cycle. And the end of the old cycle is the wrapping up of all of the old paradigms, the old negative ideas. It's kind of like been there, done that. We've played out all of the old negative scenarios. It's time now to sort of wake up. We really have kind of done it all. And so it's really time to shift gears and go into a whole set of new paths and new scenarios to explore consciousness from a completely different level. I think that's one of the reasons why so many people are waking up and even talking about all this kind of stuff. I mean, the very fact that you're using terms like, you know, light bearers and star seeds and things like that is an indication that we're seeing ourselves now. We're waking up and seeing more of what we are, that we're connected to more dimensions of reality, other civilizations, and so on and so forth. And I think that's just because now we're coming out of that long fog of forgetfulness and finally remembering what we are as greater beings. And so you're seeing all the results of that in all of the things that we're now talking about and all the things that we're now doing. And we're leaving behind all the paradigms that simply are outdated, outmoded, and no longer serve us, no longer work for us.
That is so exciting and so uplifting. Thank you so much for answering my questions about Atlantis. Daryl, before we move on to our closing message, I want to ask, what's coming up for you? I hear you're working on a new film. Maybe we can talk about that a bit.
We are. I mean, yeah, we've finished Dearly Departed, and you know, that is available on our ZiaFilms.com website and hopefully soon through Amazon downloads. But now we're in pre-production on a Bashar documentary. As you mentioned, I've been channeling Bashar for 30 years now, this extraterrestrial consciousness. And, you know, we have never really seen a movie about how someone becomes a channel and what that whole process is about. And so the movie will basically be about how I became a channel, how channeling is being used by extraterrestrial civilizations in many cases to deliver information to the Earth at this time to actually help not only uplift us, but also literally prepare us for future contact physically with these other extraterrestrial civilizations. So this documentary is called Bashar, First Contact, and it will cover all of those things: what channeling is, how it became a channel, who Bashar is, what his information is all about, and how it's preparing us for contact with their civilizations and other civilizations. We're just starting that now. We'll probably be shooting sometime in July and ideally be done with the film sometime by the end of the year. And then it's an issue of, you know, getting into film festivals, getting distribution as to when it will actually be available to the public. But we're just starting to work on that now. We're very excited about it.
Yeah, that is very exciting. I'm going to be one of the first people to see it, I'll tell you right now.
I think one of the most exciting things about it is that we're actually going to have, you know, the visual effects in it, because, you know, when I've been channeling, I see a lot of what Bashar is talking about when I channel, but no one ever gets to see, you know, what does he look like? What does his planet look like? What do the ships look like? So the movie is going to give us a chance to actually show people what all of that looks like and what I see in my head when I'm actually channeling him. So I'm very excited about that aspect of it.
Ah, now, Daryl, this has been, once again, an amazing interview. And I'd like to ask if there's a message you wish to share with our listeners now on a closing note.
Well, I think one of the main messages that we wanted to impart to people in making the movie Dearly Departed was the idea of not only exploring the afterlife and helping to comfort people and let them know that the loved ones still exist that have passed on, but also give people a chance to explore the idea of what is it they want their lives to be before they die. I think that's one of the more important aspects of the film, is giving us an understanding that it's important to live our dreams, not hesitate, not hold back, to really live our lives to the fullest so that when we do cross over, we don't take regrets with us. We say, you know, I should have done that, I could have done that. And I think that if I could get that message across in the film and people start living their lives more fully while they're alive, then I think not only will their crossing be a much more enjoyable experience, but I think that life itself on Earth will be a much more enjoyable experience for people as well. And that's one of the strong messages I would like the film to impart to people.
Ah, beautiful message. And thank you so much, Daryl, for joining us today. I had a great time talking with you.
Well, so do I. I thank you so much for the opportunity, Helene, and to everyone listening. Thank you so very much for all your support, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you, and you too. And it was an honor and a joy once again to be able to talk to you. So I just greatly appreciate it.
No, my pleasure. Thanks, Elaine.
Yes. And for our listeners, I highly recommend Dearly Departed. To purchase the DVD, you can visit Daryl's website, www.ziafilms.com. And I want to say thank you to all of our listeners tuning in to Embracing What's Real. I'm your host, Helene Lipson, sending love, light, and blessings to you. For more information about our upcoming shows, come see me at my website, www.insightsbyhelene.com, or come visit my Facebook page, Helene Lipson. Next Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Helene Lipson Show, we'll be offering free karmic astrology and channeled readings to those who call in. The call-in number is 646-716-8890. Ilya Nabatovsky will be my special guest, so please join us. And till we meet again, please remember, anything and everything is possible. What you believe is what you create. So dream big. Namaste.